Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like worried of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Just another sexy Monday, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Football Ramble. England are out of the Nations League and Wales win again. It's Monday, 16th of November. I'm Marcus Speller.
I'm Andy Brassel.
And I'm Jim Campbell.
Hi, everybody. Nothing manic about today. It's Jimmy and Andy in the studio. Boys, how the dickens are you?
Knee bad.
Excellent, thanks.
Excellent. Jim, you've got an important announcement.
I do. We've got a brand new episode of the Book Club out today. Kate and myself were joined by the legend of England women's football, Eni Aluko, to talk about her autobiography, They Don't Teach This. We have a look back on her storied career, as well as the deeply painful circumstances that ended her 12 years playing for England. It's a really insightful and enjoyable listen from one of England's greatest forwards, and it was a lot of fun. She was excellent company,
and
it was a great book as well.
Yeah,
so,
amazing.
Yeah, she was brilliant. So please, do check it out now. It's out now on Football Ramble Presents.
Oh, Andy, you've worked with Eni before.
Yeah, I would very much like to read her book, actually, Jim. Mm. So if I could have a loan, that'd be nice.
Absolutely.
Uh-huh. Jim's obviously worked with Annie, and I would make a great strike force with her.
Mm. Yes.
Thank you. Needed to get you both on board with that.
I can imagine you playing for Juventus, actually.
Oh, gentlemen, England are out of the UEFA Nations League. What a great shame. It's not going to be the jamboree that it was last time, Jim. No. There'll be no medals around those English necks as there were last time. They did get medals for finishing third. Yes, they were handed in a plastic bag to Gareth Southgate, and he was told to get on with it, but that they were still medals.
Yeah, there were medals around English necks, as the saying goes.
Exactly. it's a seldom used saying. But there won't be this time, sadly. But no, it was fair and square, obviously. England...
It was definitely square.
Yes, it was. But my goodness, Andy, what a... If you're going to lose 2-0, that's how you do it, eh?
Exactly, to a goal that was deflected twice and the goalkeeper feathered onto the inside of the post before it went in.
Should that even count, Andy?
Probably not. Probably not, no.
No, exactly. No, yeah.
It's,
so
it's morally, it's not a goal, is it?
So, Jim, how did you celebrate this English victory? I have to say that I'm sort of baffled by this. It was a frustrating evening watching it. I'm sure it was even more so if you were playing in it. England lost to a side that we know are better than England. They're ranked number one in the world, of course. And one can say, well, England sort of dominated in the second half. Did Belgium let them dominate? Probably is the answer.
And also, dominate is a funny term, isn't it? We've seen it bandied around a lot. It's not like they were carving much out that was clear.
No, exactly.
But they had a decent amount of possession.
Yeah,
that's about it, really.
Yeah, I mean, if Belgium were 2-0 up, I think people often forget that particular fact.
Crucial, that, wasn't it, to the makeup of the second half. Having said that, there were chances in the first half. Mm. And what I think you have to say when you look at the performance rather than just the result, and I think that's just as important at this point, because you find, I think, when you come to this weekend's Nations League, because of our current feeling about international football and its place in life in general, I think a lot of people are just totally unaware of what the standings were for the Nations League, because that's where we are. I thought the Nations League, certainly the first Nations League, was a very positive thing, getting rid of a lot of trash friendlies and really ramming up the intensity of international football, which I think we all like to see. We all like to see worthwhile football.
Cool.
I think this second edition of the Nations League is just a victim of chronology and a victim of current circumstance. But it is what it is. And I think with that in mind, the performance is actually more important than the result. And I know a lot of people this morning and a lot of people last night were picking holes in Gareth Southgate and his choices, his approach. Belgium will be one of the favourites for the Euros going in next year. And England made them defend. England really made them defend. England minus Sterling and Sancho made them defend. And I thought that was actually like relatively promising. I don't think there's any reason to throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Andy, I love that. I thought you might be a little bit more scathing towards England, but there you are with a bit of positivity to you know, brighten up English Mondays. Because
that is a challenge.
It is. It really is. I thought, Jim, that. Yeah, okay. I mean, you know, I agree with what you're saying, Andy, but I couldn't get away from the fact that Belgium were 2-0 up. I know the goals, you can say, well, it wasn't a free kick. And blah, blah, blah. Well, the goals went in.
But these things happen.
Exactly. The goals went in. How then do you respond? And England did have chances. They didn't take any. It was slightly unlucky, maybe here and there. But
yeah, the Lukaku header off the line.
That was a great clearance off the line. But I did think to myself, I don't know how to feel after a game like that, because Southgate was very, very sort of forward in his praise with some of the players, and particularly Grealish, and Kane was like, oh, well, I thought we were fantastic and whatnot. Yeah. But they didn't break Belgium down.
No, they didn't. And it was like England were just dealt with quite comfortably, weren't they? So it's hard to know what to take away from that. It's like almost like they've been in a boxing match where they've not really landed a blow.
Well, the thing is, I mean, Belgium didn't need to attack.
Exactly. Yeah. It was, they were so comfortable, just sort of held England at arm's length, got the goals they needed fairly comfortably, regardless of, you know, deflections and whether or not it was a free kick, you know? I mean, we can't really be, you
they're
know,
not fair.
Saying
it's not fair.
Don't count, can we? So, yeah, it was a bit disheartening, wasn't it? Because obviously...
defenders appeal that. It's deflected!
No, deflected!
Twice! Check on VAR.
Yeah. But there's appealing and there's appealing.
No, I
thought the way that Declan Rice
appealed. It belonged in 90210 or something like that. It wasn't. You're meant to snarl or something when you're appealing, but he was having a real OMG moment.
Yeah, but that's because
there would have been several emojis if he was like doing that appeal on his phone.
Because in his head, he's won the ball and then got kicked. I mean, it was Keegan-esque.
So shout at the referee, so snarl at him.
No, he's not.
That's what people want to see at international level. Come on.
He's a nice boy, and you do well to remember that. Andy, much has been made of Southgate's approach with the 3-4-3. Our good friend Jonathan Wilson wrote a piece recently talking about successful international sides are built on pragmatism. And you can see that in Southgate's approach here. He's talked about, you know, if we want to go deep in tournaments and all that kind of stuff, then you've got to have this approach. Others saying that he was very wary of England's defensive fragility and playing a 4-3-3, which brought a lot more goals to the side. You know, last year England were very, very fruitful in front of goal, if that's the right expression. Mm. Whereas now England aren't scoring many goals. He's trying this system out and he's given it a fair old go. And I know some of the personnel have changed quite a lot. But what do you make of it? Because I remember ahead of the World Cup in Russia, there was those two friendlies against Germany and Brazil.
Yes.
Well, they did 3-5-2, and he was clearly working on defensive shape. That was the name of the game there. And you can and see. Whereas now England do have quite a bit of attacking talent. It seems a bit of a shame to kind of halt it slightly.
But I think Jonathan's absolutely right. The way you win international tournaments, mm-hmm. and none of this will matter when it gets to the final tournament. Mm-hmm. I think even the Nations League, you can say it's a trophy to be won, and I'm sure Belgium see it that way because they're in a very different position to England. They're sort of the generation they've got, the very talented generation they've got. This is last chance time. Mm-hmm. If they're going to win something as a group, it's now or never. That's not the case with England. They're still building towards something. I feel that what England did in Russia, in terms of the result as well, if not the performances, has made people have completely unrealistic expectations.
Well, I think the unrealistic expectations are back.
Gareth Southgate,
with a vengeance.
That they are. And I agree totally with Jonathan. If you're going to win a tournament, it's going to be with quite boring football. You look at France. You can look at Portugal in 2016 with reference to the Euros, but you look at France in 2018.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they are always having this discussion in France, like, where's the actual football?
But they could turn it on, though. Look at the game against Argentina in the second round, and then in the final. They scored 4 goals in the final.
Yeah, they didn't want to on either of those occasions.
How dare you make us do this?
They were forced to, and the game was a little bit out of their control. Whereas the 1-0 against Portugal this weekend, they were loving it. They were absolutely loving it.
That's the stuff.
1-0 to the Super France, as Arsenal used to sing back in the day.
But I'm not sure, though, that England can play that type of football.
But England have to find a way to conserve energy in major tournaments. Mm. This was a problem under Hodgson, and it's been a problem under Southgate as well. To play with this Premier League hell for leather mentality.
I agree with that, definitely.
If it doesn't happen after 60 minutes, it's not happening. Mm. And you look at the semi-final against Croatia, that's a really good example of that. That England dominated the first half, and then they hit that wall into the second half and just get picked off. And Southgate is smart and conscious that that can't happen again. And I think if he wants to work on that, various matches, you can talk about, you know, how many matches he's lost in compared to other England managers. Like I said, I don't think anyone cares. If you get to the final tournament and he's got it right, or he's closer to getting it right, all this is like acceptable collateral damage, I think.
That's the sort of the best case scenario, isn't it? But the worst case scenario is that we sort of go back to the bad old days of it all being a bit sort of flat and timid, which is how it looks at the moment. I mean, yesterday that was so conservative, it was practically a fox hunt. Like, it was that's how it felt, wasn't it? It felt like, how are they going to actually?
He has been wearing a waistcoat for a long time now. Like,
But that's kind of what it. You know, you talk about the kind of Premier League health leather approach, but you do need those periods in tournament knockout football where you do go up a gear and you do go, actually, we're going to need a 10-minute period here where we do try and blitz it, and then actually you ride that and you try and capitalise on it, and it just looked like England. I don't know how hard they actually tried to find that gear yesterday. Maybe there is a sense that the Nations League doesn't matter as much, because it didn't really feel like a competitive game, did it?
Not the pace in the team to do that last night?
Perhaps,
know?
Yeah.
I'm surprised he didn't start Sancho on the right.
Where's the extra gear to go to? Mm-hmm. I think, again, you have to look at the current situation and say it's unreasonable to not expect rotation as well. So I think we've got to be like relatively kind from that sense.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I understand what he's doing. You know, if you're concerned about the back, you three at the back, okay, it gives you a bit more stability and solidity. And then you think, well, the three up front, you know, because if you do play 3-4-3, you can defend in numbers if you're under the cosh, but you still have three going forward. Yes, they could become a bit isolated, but you saw England playing a few more diagonals, that kind of thing, trying to be a little bit more direct to maybe negate that sort of press and so on, which I get that. But it, so I mean, really, whenever I look at England, I think, can we not have a 12th man? Yeah. Can we not play 3-5-3? That would be ideal. But until we twist FIFA's arm with that, it's, I get the wing backs. You have players that can do that. You have front three, okay, you back three. It's the two in the centre of midfield. I don't know if England have those types.
It's about the profile of player, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think that's what it is. And to be honest with you, looking at the squad, I mean, I was talking to a friend of mine and he said, I know this sounds ridiculous, but a type of player like a Steven Gerrard in the centre of midfield, not the team again, but that kind of player, sort of a bit more box to box and so on. And a lot is asked of Henderson. I know you need a sort of shield with Declan Rice. To be honest, the only player really coming through that you might suggest that, as my mate suggested, was Jude Bellingham, but a 17-year-old, it's a lot to ask.
It is. Because I think, to get the ball in behind, it needs to go out wide first, effectively, right? And that is always going to be it's an added layer that which you need to get through. So it's that does really feel like a problem, doesn't it? But I think obviously the positive a lot of people have been talking about is Jack Grealish. Mm. Maybe there's an argument that he floats around a little bit more, or you know, like that he could fill that role if he cuts inside more. But like
if he just does that skill.
Just
over
does
and
that
over, again.
Over and
I think
over
we'll be
again.
Happy with that.
Brilliant.
We?
It was so good to watch. And like, obviously, I want Gareth Southgate to figure out his best system. I want as many players to get the minutes he thinks they need as possible. And I know that it's probably unlikely that he'll start Grealish against Iceland because he'll want to see, you know, if mm-hmm. someone else can do
yes.
something. But I really want to see him start against Iceland, even though I understand all that. But it's because ultimately I'm a fan and I want to be entertained. And there aren't really many players England have that make me feel like that, where I'll tune in for them specifically. And Grealish feels like that, doesn't he? And that, yeah. It's been a long time since.
We've got to be careful, though, here, because our obsession with the kind of get hit if we have him in.
I'm not saying build a team around
him.
No, I
know you're not.
Like, I really want to sit in front of my TV and
of
watch
course.
Him play.
Absolutely, yeah. Jim. I think we're all agreed there, but I'm just saying that can then lead to this media hysteria of, oh, if we don't have that person. I mean, I can remember, you know, a couple of people I know going really, really annoyed at Euro 2004, was it? When we went out the tournament because he hadn't put Jermaine Defoe on the bench or something like that. You know what I mean? You get obsessed with these particular players. Oh, well, if we had that person, you think, no, actually, if you've got a system.
Someone has greater value when they're not there.
Yeah, absolutely. Exactly.
Don't they? But I think, basically, the bottom line is he'll end up building the team around Kane, as he should do, because Kane is England's best player. Mm-hmm. But I think there's got to be a recognition of what Kane has become, which is not just a number nine, but this mm-hmm. player who's very, very good. And you're talking about that lack of genuine craft in the middle. Well, maybe Harry Kane makes that up. Mm-hmm. Because if you let him play his natural game that he does at club level, and I realise not everyone mm-hmm. in an international team can play their natural team. Sure. They can play their natural game from club
I mean,
level.
He was drifting a
because,
lot last night.
Yeah, because you have to give a bit because, mm-hmm. you know, you can't go out and buy players. But in terms of Kane, he's earned that right. And I think the fact is, if he's going to drop and play the passes that we know he can do so mm-hmm. effectively, what do you need? You need pace. Mm-hmm. And that's not Mountain Grealish.
No, whether
you like it or not.
Mm. I mean, Grealish, but I still think you could have room for Grealish. But again, you don't have to play this sort of symmetrical. You can play slightly differently.
Yeah,
you
France are asymmetrical. They've got an asymmetrical 4-4-2, haven't they? So that can work. Sure.
So you need on that right side, if Grealish is going to be on the left, which is what people would like, I think there's a real understandable desire for that, and I would definitely be in there.
But again, this is the difference between what fans want and what Gareth Southgate's trying to build. He's trying to build a tournament winner.
He
doesn't or shouldn't care about entertaining people.
No, but he was very full of praise for Grealish after the game, and so we're going on his words as well. But
that was Kane as well. It's encouraging, isn't it?
It is encouraging, but on that right side, that's where when he played Mount, I thought actually Sancho would have been a better option in that particular game, because you have those players. You've got Sterling, Rashford, Sancho, to name three. And that's the type of player that Kane likes to link up with. We've seen Kane and Sterling link brilliantly, and obviously Son at club level and so on. So you can still have that. But we shall see. It was a 10th defeat for Southgate, 48 games, which, more than I thought, actually, becomes the first England manager to lose 10 games since Fenjor and Eriksson. So he's in good company.
Three of those against Belgium in tournament football.
I mean, old Svenigan's lost 10 of his 67 games in charge. So you know, Southgate's record isn't brilliant. So he's up against it, really. Well, not up against it, but he's, you know, the pressure is now on going into this tournament.
I think this is just almost an anomaly. I don't think it really matters, given what he's trying to build. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, Sven-Göran Eriksson had an impeccable record, generally speaking, give or take a Northern Ireland in qualifying, but it's got to be about the back end of a tournament
Well, look at Portugal. They always, I don't know about actually recently, but traditionally they would always
love to make heavy weather of it. Yes, they do.
And they are the current European champions, lest we forget. UEFA Nations League champions as well.
Oh, but they've lost the Nations League now.
You
know, they were the first, you know, when people talked about, oh, Germany could be the first team to be relegated from the Nations League.
Yeah.
Isn't that extraordinary? Yeah. In the first edition of the Nations League. I think Portugal are the first team to be genuinely sad to be knocked out of the Nations League as they were at the weekend.
It's a weird one, isn't it? I have something I think could be an ace up Gareth's sleeve.
Mm-hmm.
I know that you enjoyed this as well, Marcus.
Theo Walcott?
But not Theo Walcott, no. But the national anthems.
Oh,
now,
yes!
Now that there are no fans and you can hear them, oh my God, that was the highlight of the game for me. It was so funny. It was so dissonant. Like, it was such a dissonant drone. And, like, they're mic'd up now. It's entirely possible that there aren't going to be fans in the stadium for the Euros. Hopefully there will be, but it's a possibility that there won't, right? Mm-hmm. But in that situation, whether there is or not, let's properly mic them up, get a choir master in to knock them into shape so that they can belt out the national anthem. Yeah. It'll be like Our Hacker. It will intimidate any team we're playing. Do it.
Will it intimidate?
Yeah, come on, Marcus. You have everybody I know should be getting on this train.
I'd like to add in a couple of extra details there. So what they should do then, if you want to turn it into a sort of New Zealand hacker style sort of thing, is instead of like facing the normal way, I don't know whether there is protocol or not that you have to face a certain way. Perhaps there is. But if there isn't, Andy, what the England players should do, they should all just turn round and look at the opposition while they're singing. That'll put the willies up then, wouldn't it, Andy?
I'm thinking human pyramid.
Injuries galore. Yeah, Kane at the top of the pyramid. And he fall down. And, oh, no, he's done his knee.
But I think the problem with that is you're relying on a few players, maybe a Ben Chilwell, for example, to really carry it. Because, like, think back to school assembly. Like, 70% of the kids are miming.
And when
I heard that, I felt justified in miming throughout my school career.
That's why you got to get a good choir master. He's not having any of that.
Yeah,
he or she, of course, would whip this team into shape and just go, no, you're all belting this anthem out at the top of your lungs.
Mm-hmm. I'll tell you what, if you're
staring into the whites of the enemy's eyes,
if you're Tammy Abraham listening to that, you're thinking, oh, I've got a great chance of getting picked for the squad now. Have you ever seen his video that he did for his initiation at Swansea, where he does a quite magnificent version of End of the Road by Boys to Men?
Was it Tammy Abraham when, that he was, oh, you've got to sing in front of the lads? And then he did, and everyone was like, oh, tears in their eyes. That's pretty good there.
Yeah, exactly. As opposed to when Jude Bellingham did his initiation at Dortmund, which the players had tears in their eyes for an entirely different reason. Jadon Sancho was falling off his chair crying with laughter.
Oh, Jadon, you nasty piece of work. Well, they're teammates, of course, at club and country. So good luck to them and good luck to old England. Gentlemen, elsewhere in the Nations League, Spain drew 1-1 with Switzerland. Funny old affair, that.
Amazing.
Sergio Ramos, on his 177th international cap, record breaker. Hey, that is remarkable.
It really is, isn't it?
In that, for that country, who dominated football for that sort of four or five year period when they were absolutely imperious, he was there. He absolutely incredible career he's had. Unfortunately,
and is still having, very much.
Yeah. Absolutely. Unfortunately, though, he missed two penalties in the game.
He did. The co-commentator called the second one a penenki.
Yeah. Which was very nice. Yeah, the first one, good save from Sommer in goal, fair enough. And then the second one, you think, all right, Lace is behind this, pal. And he thought, yeah, no, I'm going to do what Adamola Lookman couldn't.
But this has been in the post. I mean, he's someone who takes like 6-7 penenkas a season.
Yeah. And he also, I mean, obviously, he does the stuttering run-up, doesn't he? He loves it.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, after that penalty against Bayern in the Champions League semi-final, going back to 2012, you must think, I'm never leathering a penalty ever again.
Yeah, but we've seen...
And it generally works for him.
But it does. We've seen him put him in the top corner and stuff. You know, he takes penalties a lot, you know, as we've seen him. So I was surprised with the second one where he thought, okay, I'll have you, son.
Sommer did come off his line, didn't he?
Did he?
Yeah. But, I mean, it's still a terrible penalty. I think he caught it.
He had time to come off his line, go back on it, come off it
come
again.
Come back again, yeah.
But I think the thing that really surprised me is when Jan Sommer saved that second one. Normally, when a keeper saves a penenka, they're absolutely fuming.
Yeah.
You know, there's the adrenaline of having saved it combined with the how dare you do that to me. The lack of respect is disgusting. But he was just, oh, that was easy.
Yeah, I think he was quite happy though.
Yeah.
Say, you mug.
Yeah. Then went on to concede in the 89th minute.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, I know. It would have been nice for Ramos to score, of course, but 177 international caps. That is
one cap for every muscle.
Yeah. That beard is exceptional as well, isn't it?
Yes.
He's got a bit of a Thor guy like vibe going on. I don't mean Chris Hemsworth as Thor, I mean the actual Norse deity.
Yeah, he's a bit like that, especially when he takes his top off. You see him in the gym.
Ridiculous.
He's an absolute special. Yeah,
I had no idea you shared a gym.
Yeah. Just with Andy. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to go for a quick break and then we'll talk about Wales and Scotland. See you in a moment.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the air in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
I'm Martin Keown and you're listening to Football Ramble.
Yeah, maybe just once more about the Football Ramble. That'd be all right.
Hi. I'm Martin Keown and you're listening to the Football Ramble. I'm Martin Keown.
Second time's a charm. Welcome back to the Football Ramble, everybody. Oh, before we do anything else, let's have a Betway 4 to Score update from our 4 to Score this weekend. Entry to Betway's 4 to Score is free each week. Pick the first goal scorer in Betway's 4 selected matches for your chance to win the weekly £50,000 jackpot. Make sure your selections are submitted before the first game. Further T's and C's apply. In game 1, of course, it finished Portugal 0, France 1. I picked Cristiano Ronaldo. The result was N'Golo Conte. Mm. I got it wrong. Game two, Switzerland 1, Spain 1. Vish picked Alvaro Morata. It was, of course, Remo Frula. In game three, Germany beat Ukraine 3-1. Andy picked Serge Gnabry. It was, of course, Roman Yaremchuk. In game four, Belgium 2, England 0. Luke picked Harry Kane. It was Youri Tielemans. We didn't do very well.
Yeah. Never mind Youri Tielemans. I mean, you're Youri Geller if you've managed to get that lot right. Always nice to have a Roman in there, though.
I'd say so.
Yeah, international football's hard, I think.
It's very difficult. We'll be back with another round of Betway's Four to Score on the preview show this Friday. All right, everybody, let's have a bit of this. Just even a show.
You know, I'm never mentioning, not complaining, mentioning that I'm never asked to read emails ever again, because now I've just been given an email avalanche.
Yeah. Oh, no, Andy.
But this is a pleasant one to receive because it's from Darren Wheelhouse. Hello, Ramblers. After listening to Friday's show and hearing the name of the wonderful Youri Geller.
Hey.
Two mentions in a show, that's not bad, is it? I'm reminded of a story Ant and Dec told about him during his time in the jungle. Youri was about to start a trial and asked the boys how his beloved Exeter had got on in the FA Cup that particular weekend. The boys told him that they weren't allowed to tell him. So, magnificent Youri closed his eyes in deep thought before giving a small fist pump and a cheer in victory. Little did Youri know that Exeter had lost 2-0 and proceeded to look rather foolish. No Sky Plus in the jungle, mate.
Youri Geller, one of society's biggest prats.
Oh, dear. I love that he's... Has he made a comeback? Was he ever away? Was he ever here?
Really.
We don't know. We do not know.
Do you have something to do with him getting his own Scotland shirt?
No, I got it wrong, actually. I said it was a Euro 96 shirt. It was a World Cup 98 shirt, actually.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, I had nothing to do with it. But if I knew he was accepting...
Like Youri Geller, you had nothing to do with it.
But if I knew he was accepting old shirts from the past, then I would have sent him an avalanche of the bandy and said, you know, hold this one up, pal. My goodness, we could do with a bit of luck.
That's a quite profound image, that, isn't it? An avalanche of Scotland shirts.
Yeah. Well, not just Scotland. Whoever you want the sun to shine on, send Youri the shirt and the fortunes will turn, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You ever thought about that, Jim?
No, I haven't.
Get Arsenal up the league. There we are. Right then, gentlemen. Talking about top of the league, let's go to Wales. They beat Ireland 1-0. The Welsh are on fire, Andy. Mm.
Yes.
Another victory, another clean sheet. Seven clean sheets in a row. And this was, of course, without Ryan Giggs in the dugout, as we, you know, for well-documented reasons. So they're flying high. I mean, if they avoid defeat against Finland on Wednesday, then they'll get promoted.
I mean, there are many sad things about there being no football fans in the stadiums at the moment, but obviously one of them is the fact that, you know, you could have had in the closing stages of this the Cardiff crowd singing in lovely voices as they always do, "We are going up."
Yeah, that would have been good, wouldn't it?
It would have been special. But what I think is amazing is the fact that Gareth Bale, who you think of as, you know, if you think of, I was on the radio last night and we were talking about which player is like the most integral, the most indispensable to their international team. We're talking about Ronaldo with Portugal, Kane with England, Lewandowski with Poland, and Bale with Wales. But actually, they've been playing with the shadow of Gareth Bale for a little while.
Yeah.
Now, through no fault of his own, he needs to get himself back to match sharpness. And funnily enough, rather than him carrying them, they're carrying him.
Ah, the tables have turned.
At the moment. And you have to say, it's a very talented and very coherent group as well.
It is. And they look like they're going to get promoted, say, just avoiding defeat against the Finns. Who, I mean, to be fair to Finland, they're on a nice bit of form, beating France, of course.
First time qualifiers as well?
Yes, that's right, yeah. But poor old Ireland, Jim. After seven matches in charge, Stephen Kenny, his side's only scored one goal. They've yet to win a game. But he backs himself. He said after the game, I know I'm going to be a success.
Mm. Well, I mean, you've got to take that attitude into it, isn't it? It's a very, very difficult situation to turn around, and you're not exactly just going to lie down and go, this is going terribly. This is a lot harder than I thought it was. I'm probably going to mess this up.
But saying the words, I know I'm going to be a success, I mean, it's quite a bold statement.
Yeah, I guess that in a sense that you have to succeed a lot more, don't you? Mm-hmm. If you're taking that tone. But yeah, it's a tough one to turn around, and with fairly limited resources, I suppose. But I don't know about you, I'm just really happy to see David Brooks score, because he had a difficult time last season, missed a lot of football, mm-hmm. and he's a player that looks a real talent, and that was he's a developing talent, and it's a shame to see a player like that miss a big chunk of time, and to see him on the score sheet is really, really good.
Yeah, and Wales turned it around as well, you know, shifting from a back three to a back four, and it seemed to kind of work out quite well. Because the thing is, for the Ireland, I do see what Kenny's trying to do. He's trying to make them a bit more attacking and a little bit more exciting, I suppose. And I actually think it will begin to turn itself around. I just think that might even get that goal, get that win, and then suddenly the wheels start turning. But it's very, very difficult for them at the moment. Scotland lost finally. After that unbeaten run, my goodness. A number of the Scottish players were rested, of course, in the side that beat Serbia. But it wasn't, Andy, you were talking about, don't just look at the result, look at the performance. It was a decent performance from Scotland.
They played really well.
And that mighty Rodak in goal, Fulham's finest. Well, second finest, he's on the bench. But he made some great saves. And Scotland, again, will be quite pleased with their performance, even though the result didn't go their way.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm still reeling from the revelation that John Carver's part of the setup. I wasn't aware of that.
Well, is it any surprise, Jim, that John Carver, Scotland haven't qualified for a major tournament for so long, and as soon as John Carver joins the setup, bang, they're there.
Mm, can't be coincidence.
No,
I mean, exactly. I suppose it could be.
Yeah. Well, he's obviously.
It might be, yeah.
I mean, he's had an ounce of influence, hasn't he, old Joe? You're not pleased with him after that, having to do it at Newcastle all those years ago, Andy?
Delighted for him.
Yes, okay. Well, he apparently tore his calf while running onto the pitch to celebrate, and knew Mitrovic was going to miss the penalty. That's the John Carver we know! There he is! He said, the adrenaline is flowing, and I knew Mitrovic was going to miss that penalty. I sat next to Scotland goalkeeping coach Stevie Woods on the plane, and I watched him miss a couple, so I was concentrating on that area.
I mean, you said that yourself, didn't you, Marcus? You said after
I think everybody did, to be honest. Yeah.
I felt like he was, like, I don't know, the stage was set for it to all go wrong, and so it did, thankfully for Scotland.
What we need in this situation is a cool head, thought Serbia.
Poor old Mitro. Great save from us.
So, I mean, Scotland are in a really good position in their group, aren't they? And you know, this is a good chance for them to build momentum ahead of the Euros and just keep the good times going.
Oh, I think they will.
Yeah.
But, you know what? When we're talking about the whole relegation promotion thing with the Nations League, I don't want to take it back to Fulham here, but does Scotland want to get promoted? I mean, someone suggested to me over the weekend that maybe Ireland are looking at this, thinking, and I understand this has all been sprung a bit on Stephen Kenny, you know, talking about chronology, and he's really having to busk it on the spot with not a particularly good squad. But I wonder if people look back at Ireland in a few years' time, they think, and the reason we qualified for the European Championship in 2024 is because we got relegated from the second Nations League and it was way easier to qualify from Group C. It's almost the Scotland route, isn't it?
Yeah, although I think Ireland they're not in pole position to get relegated, though, in the group.
How disappointing.
You're going to have to try harder, lads, or lesser, whatever it would be.
Well, it's going well, though, isn't it, in that regard?
It is, yeah.
Small steps.
Indeed, yeah. Let's finish the Nations League chat with a bit of San Marino. They've gone undefeated in two competitive fixtures, for the first time ever.
Beautiful.
Isn't that amazing?
It's most serene.
Captain Dante Rossi was in tears of joy after back-to-back draws against Liechtenstein and then Gibraltar.
I completely get your enthusiasm there, Marcus, as well, because there have been a lot of people saying, oh, what's the point in the Nations League, like, particularly now, blah 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 blah, but I think people forget what it's replacing very, very quickly.
Yeah.
Like, you know,
those people want a European Super League.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah,
they do.
That's what I think of those people, genuinely.
I agree. I have to say, North Macedonia getting to the Euros,
glorious.
Yeah. Magnificent.
Yeah. But I mean, there would have been, like, you know, Liechtenstein might have been playing England, you know, and it would just would have been like,
just well, of course, drudgery.
In the qualifiers, they will do. But you're absolutely right. I mean, you know, when you hear Dante Rossi say, "I dedicate this draw to the whole country. We are a small country, but we have a big heart."
Marcus,
it's glorious.
As such a lover of international football, mm-hmm. if we're assuming that England call up is not coming yep. now for mm-hmm. you, I'm sorry. It's Southgate's fault. Is that why you're so brutal about him at the top of the show? Yeah. If you could...
I'm waiting for that Scotland call-up, baby.
There we go. If you could naturalise and play for one of the smaller nations,
obviously.
Like a group, a League D type yeah, nation, yeah. Which one would you play for?
Oh, that's a good question. Gibraltar. It's yeah. the nearest oh. thing.
Striding in with your blue passport.
Sealand? Perhaps a bit of Sealand?
No, who are they?
Sealand.
Who are you?
Military fort.
No, I know.
A little micronation.
Oh, I thought that was that thing with the dolphins in Miami. No, that's Sea World, isn't it?
That's Sea World. It's subtly different.
Yeah. I'd go Andorra, I think.
Would you?
Yeah.
Why?
I think it's a good cultural fit. Sort of midway between France and Spain.
Yeah, okay. Like, I see what you're doing there.
Basically a ski resort, isn't it, Andorra, mm-hmm. effectively?
Yeah, pretty much.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, so it's been a lovely old time and we look forward to the last few fixtures, of course, that will be happening midweek. Gentlemen, a few things to take care of, or a couple of things at least on the home front. Pay-per-view has been scrapped until at least the new year.
Yay! Maybe in the new year we'll love it. Yeah. Maybe in the new year we'll be up for paying nearly 15 quid for a dead rubber.
You've got to celebrate all the little victories, Jim. Yeah. We're pushing them back. We've got tanks on their lawn. I'm delighted that Fulham are going to be on, I think, on the BBC One. I think one of their Brilliant. Games is going to be shown, which is glorious because they've been on pay-per-view for too long now, damn it all, and the nation has been starved of that Fulham-y goodness.
If there was going to be a Premier League game that directly followed the One Show, I do feel it would be a Fulham game.
Absolutely. And do you
is
think...
that a dig?
No, it's just it's a comment right. on Fulham and its
clientele.
Just
they would be part of a lovely bit of prime time entertainment. Yeah.
And I think that's why they've been put on pay-per-view a lot, isn't it? It's assumed that the fans can afford it.
No, I
like,
don't think
so. You and I went to Fulham a little while ago and all of the food comes in a hamper, doesn't it? It's like a little
very
like a little picnic hamper.
It's actually in a hamper.
You get your chutney cheese. And your little cheese board.
Yeah.
Your little bottle of port.
Again, is this a dig or is it a comment?
It's just a comment.
Yeah, okay, right. How much are the burgers at Arsenal again?
The brisket burger is £17.50, Marcus, right, as you well know.
Right, up yours with a rusty
and
one, then.
The fries are not included.
Yeah, right.
I particularly enjoyed how, in one little comedy riff, you both managed to very succinctly explain why English fans end up paying through the nose yeah. for everything. Because it's not like, let's unite and fight the man. Mm. It's, let's say what your club does.
Yeah. It's actually astonishing.
Although, actually, I suppose the reversal of pay-per-view has kind of been something different to that. And for the first time, it's been fans coming together and saying, we're not going to stand for this making a difference.
It's been a good thing. But can we take a moment to step back and reflect on the fact that the $14.95 for a pay-per-view game is less than a burger at Arsenal? Unbelievable.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. I mean, it was me thinking it was.
Maybe it is £14.50. Maybe it's the same price. I can't remember.
No, it was more. Yeah. It was definitely more.
The bottom line is it's being served in the UK, so it's going to be burnt to a crisp anyway and absolutely inedible.
It's going to be poor, Andy. My goodness. Well, look, well done, everybody. As a collective, though, we've managed to push them off until the new year at least. Yeah. So let's keep pushing that back.
January, when everyone's feeling flush, they'll reassess it.
When you're doing dry January, Jim, you think, you know what, we'll make up for this pay per view. Deary me. Gentlemen, let's finish the show. Sad news, Ray Clements has died at the age of 72. Very well decorated footballer, of course, winning a lot of league titles, European Cups with Liverpool, won trophies with Tottenham Hotspur as well. And there's been some really nice tributes to Ray Clements. I mean, you know, only the age of 72. I mean, I know... You know, it's not a young man, but still, though, it's still young, if you see what I mean, you know. And a giant of the game. And one thing that people say around this, I think Roy Keane said it on TV, actually, is that, you know, you can talk about his career, absolutely, but what a great guy he was as well. Yeah. I mean, it just everybody said that about him. And I always find it interesting when somebody like that, I remember when Sir Bobby Robson died, everyone kept saying what a nice guy he was, what a great man he was. And you think to yourself, yeah, that is really the legacy.
Yeah, that's your legacy. And it's certainly in terms of what we should be thinking about at the moment, which is his family and his friends. Mm-hmm. But if we go back for a minute to what he was as a footballer, which obviously might be for some listeners a little bit before their time, he was hugely responsible for making Liverpool the global behemoth that they are today. And, you know, when you go back to Liverpool winning the... I was saying to someone earlier, when you go back to Liverpool winning the Premier League earlier this year, the reason that it was such a big thing all over the world was because they built what Shankly called this bastion of invincibility in the late 60s, the 70s, and especially the 70s and the 80s. And he was a huge part of that, because you can talk about the three European Cup wins, and he was integral in those. But the two UEFA Cups before that as well, which were the run-up, because they beat Borussia, you mentioned Gladbach in one and Club Brugge in the other, and they ended up beating Gladbach, who were a real team of the 70s from Germany, in the first European Cup they won in 77 as well. But if he hadn't have saved a penalty from Jupp Heynckes in the UEFA Cup, in the first leg of that UEFA Cup final in 73, they very well may not have gone on and won that. So he had a hugely pivotal part in that. His last game for Liverpool was a European Cup final when they beat Real Madrid in Paris. So this is a guy who was an absolute giant of the game.
Mm-hmm. And one of UEFA Cup was with Tottenham Hotspur as well.
Yeah, he didn't play, did he? In the final, in the end, it was Tony Parks.
No, but he was still a part of it.
Yeah, he was on the bench, so he was kind of coaching Parks through it. Wasn't
he also got 61 England caps in the time of Peter Shilton.
Yeah,
which is pretty astonishing stuff.
Uh-huh. Well, Shilton sort of came. Yeah, Shilton was there about. Shilton sort of
they
eventually
kind of swapped kind of goalkeeping duties for a time, didn't they?
Yeah.
But it's still amazing. And also, you know, he was a huge part of England setups under a lot of different managers.
Yeah. Like,
as a coach, and he's left a sort of indelible mark on England's goalkeeping history. Really.
Well, I think that's a good point, because, you know, with Clements, then, you know, Shilton would come along. I think for a while that England had a great reputation for producing really top goalkeepers. You know, it was always a position that was that was well revered in this country. You know, and as I say, they got sort of a bit of international recognition and so on. You know, you think the likes of Banks before him and so on, but he was hugely part of that incredible lineage of great English goalkeepers.
And a bit ahead of his time as well, because he was pretty good with the ball at his feet, which wasn't really a thing then as well.
Yeah, and you could be forgiven as a manager for not encouraging a player with those pitches that they played on for a goalkeeper playing the ball out of the back with his feet and so on, you know. So yeah, a giant of the game, and rest in peace, Ray, absolutely. All right, gentlemen, on tomorrow's show, I'm back with Luke and Pete. Interesting times ahead, ladies and gentlemen, for your terrific Tuesday tomorrow. But until then, thank you very much, Andy Brassel.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jim Campbell.
Thank you.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. See you tomorrow.
This was a Stakhanov production and part of the Acast Creative Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit. And he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was saying something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with something, you know.
And on my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.